Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. Before we get started, I'd like to ask a favor. If you haven't done so already, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. If you've already done that, thank you. These ratings help the show get discovered so it can reach a wider audience. And while you're there, click the subscribe button so that you get notified of new episodes as soon as they come out. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, you can visit driveonpodcast.com/subscribe to find other ways of subscribing, including our email list. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everyone. Today, my guest is Lynn Christian. She is the founder of Soul Salt and a motivational speaker. Lynn speaks on topics related to leadership, time management, career reinvention, and how to find your purpose and live a badass life. So, Lynn, thank you for being on the show. Welcome. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure. So I grew up in rural Utah. My father was an ex-Marine from the Korean War. And so I grew up with a Jarhead uniform in my father's closet that he would put on occasionally. And so I grew up in a very rural setting. And so I would have a lot of freedom. If I got my tours completed, I could ride my bike down to the family farm, saddle up my pony and be gone for the rest of the afternoon. So I knew a lot of freedom. I grew up and decided that when I was in high school, I thought I wanted to be an attorney because I was really good at debate in high school. And in every debate I was in from the 3 years I was in high school, each time I got the highest points. And so I thought, well, out of the speaker's points, that's kind of pointing me to an aptitude I have. I should probably develop that. And of course, I thought, well, the logical thing is to go study political history and social science and then go get a law degree. And I also, in high school, had some habits that were sort of pulling me one way. I was running and training for a track team. I was supposed to be a mile sprinter. And I had really done some things to my body the night before, and I'll leave that to your imagination, that I just couldn't perform. And I sat down literally on the curb with my feet in the gutter and thought, what am I doing? And then I also thought, not just in this moment, I'm trying to force myself to do something, and I didn't prepare my body for it. So I had this epiphany, and then I thought, and what am I doing with my education? Like, I really want to go to law school and spend the rest of my life arguing. And it's not that I don't have great respect for law. As I asked myself that question, I didn't get a resounding, yeah, that's true for you. In fact, I thought, that's going to just eat away at me. I'm competitive, I am driven, and I am going to just get into a rat wheel that you see, like the little hermit and or the little hamsters, and I'm going to be on one of those hamsters wheels the rest of my life. And I looked across the street, and I was sitting in front of my elementary school. I had run so far that I was at the other end of town, and I was sitting in front of this elementary school, and I decided I want to go do what those people in that building did for me. I want to go inspire and elevate people's opinions about what they can do with their lives. And so that's what I did. I bagged a scholarship and I went and got a degree in education, became a school teacher. I taught for 15 years. At the time, when the 15 year came around, I was a single parent raising three children. I wanted to look at the National Guard to see if that was a place where I could earn some supplemental money. Lo and behold, I had just passed the age where I could do that. So I started looking at other ways to earn a living and eventually left and went into business and became a writer. I wrote instructional design for Franklin Covey, did some ghostwriting for them, became a project manager. And in the meantime, I had been the recipient of some good coaching and found out that that personal development that a coach has is really life. It's like a finishing school for adults. So I took some of my savings, went back to school, studied to become a coach. And then while I was working full-time at Franklin Covey, I worked part-time as a coach, built up a practice. By the time I left Franklin Covey, I had been asked to be the director of innovation for their coaching company. And I was leaving behind what looked like corporate security to start my own business. And I haven't looked back since that year. It was 2004 when I did it full time. Started coaching at 1998, but I took a while to build the personal coaching side of it. So today I support the entrepreneurial mindset. I work with reinventors. So sometimes that's somebody who's leaving corporate America and wanting to reinvent and do something with their own DNA, inject that somehow into a capitalistic society and find out if they can make a living by doing things that inspire them. I also work with the entrepreneurs who have employees. And I talk a lot about those topics you mentioned, how to be true to yourself, how to be strong, because your listeners, if you've been through the armed services, you know there's a difference between strength and power and endurance. And you know that strength can look strong in the gym, but not be strong when you've got, when you have all your belongings that belong to you at that moment on your back and it's half your weight. You know, real strength comes when you can functionally move with that kind of weight. And then also how to stay focused, knowing where to attend and what are distractions. So things that I know people who are trained in the armed services have to attune to, those actually have crossover to the things that I coach individuals on. And so that's a nutshell of a professional life right there in front of you. That's maybe more than you wanted, but I hope that paints a picture of why I ended up in front of you, Scott.
No, it's actually good. And I like hearing people's journeys because, you know, sometimes, you know, life throws curveballs and you never know where you're going to end up. And it's always interesting. You know, you start off as a school teacher and then you flirt with the idea of going into the National Guard. And, you know, just because of timing really is the reason that you didn't go into the National Guard, you know, when it comes down to it. You know, your whole life trajectory from that point forward could have been totally different had you actually gone into the National Guard. And so it's, I do always enjoy hearing people's backstories and where they come from and how all of that happens. So, well, you know, when you first reached out to the show, when we first, you know, kind of communicated a little bit there, there was a number of potential topics that we're going to talk about. And I think, you know, we're going to cover some of these topics in future episodes. We're going to have you back on the show because I think they're all really great topics for the veteran audience that we have. But today we're going to be talking about knowing your core values and making choices that are true to yourself. I think one of the problems that many veterans face, whether they realize it or not, is just not knowing their own set of core values. And this actually could be for anyone, really, but I think veterans especially could fall into this category. First off, could you define what we're talking about here when we're talking about core values?
Yes. So I'm going to agree with everything you just said, Scott, because we can be recruited into a business, we can be recruited into the armed services, and part of us then adopts a core value system from the entity that we gave our consent to be a part of. And so when I define core values, and by the way, the name of my company is Soul Salt, which I did not name. I had been in business for about 5 years with the name of just Coach Lynn, because I knew I would come up with a really cheesy brand if I had to brand myself, because I'm not a brander. And so I had some marketing people come in, they gave their feedback, they listened to people I'd work with, and they said, you know, there's this thing that you do that's one part very tangible and palpable. You help us deal with what's in front of us in this world. And then there's this esoteric part, Lynn, where we don't know how you do it, but you reach into our souls and help us hear this inner wisdom. And so they said, you should be called Salt of the Soul. I'm based in Salt Lake City, Utah. And so it was like, wow, Salt of the Soul doesn't roll off your tongue. So we just dropped part of that, transposed the other part, and it's Soul Salt. And I lean into that name of the company that the clients gave us because a big part of what we do is we check in on what is your inner plumb line. So you don't have to be an engineer or carpenter to understand a plumb line. Today we use lasers. But actually the Egyptians, the ancient architects who created the pyramids, we give them credit. In part, we also see that the Greek builders and the Roman builders used them. But a lot of people think it was the Egyptian culture that came up with this idea of on a string, put a weight. Stone is better than wood because stone won't warp and erode as quickly as wood. And they would build these massive structures that we get to witness today. Those pyramids and those structures withstand the test of time. So if you want to understand core values, that's one way to think about it. It's an inner plumb line. Another way is it's a moral compass that points towards certain things that sort of light up and are your North Stars. There are other ways to think of it, but actually there are scientific things that we can talk about in a moment of how to access it, because today, because we have such great technology that we can see inside the neural networks of one's head, heart, and gut, in the moment, we can start to see that even today, we're discovering that perhaps core values come from a pattern of neural network firing, that we're the way we're wired, so that we have a propensity towards certain guiding principles. Does that give you a convoluted or a more clear definition?
No, I think that that makes sense, and I think I sort of wanted to have that sort of definition to make sure that everyone is on the same page, that we know what we're talking about when we're talking about core values, because I mean realistically it's going to be somewhat different for everybody, because my core values are going to be different than yours, and it's going to be different from anyone who's listening to this, and so it's important to know that just because my core values might be X, whatever it is, it doesn't mean that it has to fall in line with anybody else, and you shouldn't feel awkward or strange that yours aren't lining up with mine or whatever, because that's just not how these things work. So, I think that makes sense with what you said there. I want to make sure we are all sort of on the same page with that.
Can I extend what you just said, Scott, for a second?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Even one of the Army's core values of personal courage, and I read through that definition, even to a word of courage. Courage is one of my core values. And we use words. Words are not things. They're more like the tools we use to explain something that's going on inside of us, where we make meaning or how we define things. And so even if the words are the same in people's core value system, that doesn't mean they define it, and thereby they don't align with the same behaviors necessarily, even though the word might seem identical. It is unique per person, like a thumbprint. It's unique.
Right. Yeah. And that makes total sense too. Someone might just the word courage, someone might define that as, standing up to an adversary of some sort, and that could take courage, but it also could be just doing something that you're afraid of. If you're afraid of heights, right, and you're going up on a tall ladder or something like that, that might actually take some courage to do that type of thing. Speaking from experience there, where I am afraid of heights, so I definitely can hear that, where even certain words might have different definitions to different people. Mm-hmm. Right. So now that we know kind of what core values are, how does somebody go about figuring out what their core values are? I'm sitting here and I understand what core values are. How do I think to myself, how am I going to figure out what my core values are, so I know what are those important things to me?
Right. And that is a process. And I'll actually take you through part of that process if you'd like, Scott.
Sure.
it is a unique process. It's almost like the distillation of, say, rum, or how the dew condenses slowly, it forms. And so being patient and giving yourself an allowance of having it occur to you over time is very wise. And then even after you identify it, allowing it to be malleable, mold over time and refine. Because what I find for myself and for those around me when I'm working with clients, this is the baseline concept of what we do together in my coaching practice. Even when we identify that plumb line, the rest of your life is an experiment on refining, well, what did I mean when I said courage? And how does it manifest in this decision? Or how does it guide me in this situation? So it can be a lifelong process of having a conversation with that inner plumb line, even once you identify what the maybe what the different vectors are that converge in and give you that line. So what should we just play with that for just a minute and give the audience a chance to, okay. So first thing I would ask you to do is there are people in our lives, and Scott, be thinking of this because I'm going to ask you directly to name them. There are people in our lives that stand out as holding some kind of deeper meaning for us than others. Maybe it's because we admire some piece of them. It's really hard to admire an individual in totality because we have our shadow side. But there are people that we might admire for some aspect of their character. It may be somebody that we respect or somebody that we can't put our finger on it, but we have an affinity for them. Like there's a reason we feel drawn to them. We notice them. We want to see what they're doing. They're almost like a micro hero for some aspect, or it's like, yeah, what they're doing, that's me. That's what I want to do. So just off the top of your head, as you've heard that little bit of stimuli, what did that evoke in you, Scott? What sort of, you know, name three people that came to mind.
Yeah. So actually, as you're talking, several people did come to mind. And I think how you were saying how in totality, you know, maybe not, you don't have, that same affinity for the person, for their whole, everything that they are, but there's bits and pieces that you admire about those individuals. And so for instance, one of the people that popped in my mind is somebody that I served with in the military, and he does a lot of, you know, great stuff with his kids, and he's always you know, putting his kids first, and he's just a really, really great father. And so to me, just his attitude and his, you know, appreciation for his children and you know, just being a great father is one of those things that I look at and like that's somebody who's doing it right. You know, then there's, you know, someone, I'm just going to use my father as an example, but there's others that pop into mind, but, you know, someone who has, you know, worked a long, hard career and he's, you know, made a success of himself and he's, you know, runs a successful business. And so on the business, you know, side of things, you know, he's somebody who pops into mind, you know, for that. So there's a, you know, a couple examples there. Of mm-hmm. people that it popped in my mind, you know, right away while you were talking there.
Those are really great examples. So this service buddy of yours, mm-hmm. there's something about what he does with his kids, and you called him a great father. So I'm going to ask you to reflect for just a moment. What is it about him that he's mirroring back to you that wants to be bigger and stronger and better at something
in myself? Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no. Yeah. So, I mean, I see, and of course, you know, this is mostly through social media. So we're always seeing sure. each other's A game, you know, when, you know, right. You know, you're not posting, you know, the blooper reel on social media all the time. So, you know, so, when I compare myself to that, you know, as a father, I compare myself to that, and I am including all of my blooper reel, all the excerpts that wouldn't necessarily make it onto Instagram or whatever.
Yeah.
And I see all of those things, and I feel like, you know, maybe I there's things that I could do better. And I know in reality, I'm, you know, I am doing a good job as a father, and, you know, I'm doing the good things. But, you know, so I see him, and I just see his devotion and his willingness to do, you know, just about anything for his kids is just really inspiring. And it's one of those things that encourages me to go out and be a better father. You know, I see how he interacts with his kids and the things that he'll do for his kids. You know, and it makes me want to go out and do better and be better. You know, because we can all improve no matter what we're doing, even if we're the best.
Especially at parent. Yeah, parenthood, right?
Yeah, that's place one of those things
never ending.
They never gets you never hit the peak of your game on that. There's no star athlete, if you will, in that.
Right.
So
can I play a couple of the words that you gave me just then, and just notice if you feel one ringing more true to you than the others?
Okay.
One was being inspiring to children, and the other one was devotion to the children. Yep. Is there one that sort of rings more clear and more true than the other?
Yeah, I think the you know, the devotion aspect is something that, you know, if someone was to ask me, you know, when speaking about him, if there was any doubt in my mind that he was devoted to his kids, or there would be absolutely none, you know, no doubt whatsoever. And that's how I feel about my own kids. And that's what I want to be for my kids. I want to be devoted to them, and I want to, you know, be encouraging to them. And I want to, you know, help them, you know, with, you know, figuring out life like we all are trying to do. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's one of those things that is, you know, to me, it sort of rings true.
Well, I have the benefit of being able to look into your face and watch your expressions and your hand movements, and even see that when you said that, so I'm going to give you the challenge personally, your listeners won't get to do this. When you go back and look at this recording, notice, Scott, that when you talked about this, you came from the heart. And we suspect that our core values actually do have a function. There are 40,000 sensory neurites that we've been able to identify today in the human heart. So they sort of lit up, and you were using body language where you took your hand, pointed to your chest when you were using the word devoted to these children. And if you go back and listen to the recording, and people who will hear that, it's like you said, I'm devoted to them having a good life. So some people might listen to this recording and say, oh, because I'm being fairly transparent what we're doing here, that he values family. And maybe you like that word as a value. I would challenge you to say, you know, when we talked about it and when I gave a few questions and you went deeper than just a cursory answer, you gave flavor and color around that devotion. And I wonder if you look back over your history as a father, or even in the time when you were a serviceman, active duty, I think you were in infantry. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Was devotion always a part of your guiding principles? And even though you didn't get there, maybe 100% of the time, you said, I am willing to go there and I'm wanting to go there. I value that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you see other examples of devotion?
Yeah. You know, to my wife, to, you know, when I was in the military, I went in 100%, you know,
devoted?
I didn't, there were times when it, when it sucked and I didn't want to do the things that we were doing. And there's always those types of things that are happening. But I never never during that time was I thinking, oh, this sucks, I'm just going to quit, I'm going to walk away, I'm going to go AWOL and I'm going to be done with this. I'll never, that was never a thought that crossed my mind. It was, I have a job, I need to do it. And that's basically the end of the story there. It was just do the work and get the job done, so there's certainly other, examples like that, but, for brevity, for the sake of the episode, we can not dive too deep into that.
Well, if we look at it, you can see a pattern of how this principle, as you define it, plays out. And it's a realistic thing. Like for military people that are listening to this or non-military people that are listening, that's the reality. There were times as an infantryman, there were times as you were probably going through basic training, it sucked. There are times as a dad, it sucks. There are times as a husband, as a wife, as a partner, as a spouse, it sucks. And yet if you see that even in the hard times, you stayed devoted, the pattern across the board was, when things ironed out, when shit hit the fan at the end of the day, I was still devoted. There must be something inside of you that you use to guide you, because that is a piece of you. That's as much a part of you. That's a part that's big and bold and transparent and beautiful about you. And that's what our core values are. The Army can have 7. Individuals, usually 3, sometimes 2, maybe 4-ish. But the fewer we have, the less schizophrenic we feel, because when push comes to shove, we have to make decisions and something has to lead. And even let's say you had 3 core values, one is going to have to lead in some decisions because the other 2 may be in conflict. And so that's one of the ways to find it. And I'll tell you this, let's make this offer to you guys. I believe in this so much that I've taken hundreds. In fact, at one point we had 16,000 people going through our online course to figure out their core values. So I have an online course and we'll give you a huge discount. Like we're going to make it ridiculously accessible to your audience. And so in the show notes, go back and find out. There'll be a code just for your audience, Scott, if people want to go through our course. There are other ways to find it. You can search it online and you'll find 100 ways to do it. My white people come out with a big smile on their face and a surprise and go, wow, I didn't know that was going to happen. And yet there's that satisfaction when it rings true with you, like I saw in your face, Scott. When we talked about devotion. We got deep. There's something there that is undeniably you, and it has always been you. And that's what we're talking about. We talk about these core values, AKA plumb line, AKA North Star, whatever you want to call it. They are guiding principles that have been guiding you, regardless of your ability to have identified them up to this point.
Yeah, that's really good. And I'm glad we kind of covered, what they are and how to, sort of identify them. And with all of that knowledge and this, maybe this is sort of out of order here, but and so this might sound like a silly question, but what difference does it make if someone knows their core values or not? Maybe to rephrase that, because that sounded maybe.
I like that question, Scott. No, I like that question. So it's like, so what?
That's not how I wanted it to come off, but I guess, could someone be just as successful in, kind of navigating through life if they didn't know what their core values were? So what is the significance, I should say?
Good question. Well, to that question about could somebody do this without knowing, probably they could be somewhat successful, because if they're really functions of some neural networks, then they are firing. But it's the difference between being competent and being consciously competent. It's the difference of knowing that you can lift a lot of weight, but also knowing how do you use the levers of your muscles and bones to lift it elegantly, efficiently, and without injury. Right. So, yes, it is a like a power tool. I think it's one of the reasons, you know, people started calling me a badass. I'm 60 now. When I was 50, they started calling me a badass. And I was like, well, it could be because I've been invited into the elite gym, Jim Jones, here in Salt Lake City. It could be because I can do a double body deadlift, you know, weighing in at, today I weighed in at 109.5. My double body deadlift is 245. So I'm like, yeah, it could be those things, but those are surface. When I peeled back and got some research going, it was because I have this inner formula for integrity, and I know it's helped me make decisions. A really good case study of that is an old one, and I relate to this because I had a child in my arms, a babe in my arms, back in 1982, when Tylenol had this terrible, what was Johnson & Johnson, Tylenol was one of their heavy hitters. It had like 33% of the market share for its brand of painkillers. And I woke up one day to hear this terrible story about a little schoolgirl in Chicago who had a headache, and her parents gave her a Tylenol and sent her back to bed and said, we'll come get you in an hour. And if you feel better, we'll go to school. When they went back, she was dead. Now, Johnson & Johnson for a while did not know what was going on. And none of us who are following that terrible story knew what was going on. And what was worse was we had babes in our arms and children in our family, and we had Tylenol in our medicine chest. So we potentially had poison in our medicine chest. And come to find out, Johnson & Johnson, the backstory is, they went back to their credo, their core values that said, our stakeholders come second, our clients come first. So they pulled all the Tylenol off the shelves, completely disrupted the stockholders' plan for having a boom year.
Right.
And they lost millions and millions, hundreds of millions, at least 100 million. Come to find out, somebody had tampered with Tylenol, put cyanide in the capsules. This is how we have today tamper-resistant containers from this one thing that happened in history that was horrible, that took lives. But Johnson & Johnson was not at fault. Had they hemmed and hawed, made excuses, done a spin, tried to save their stakeholders, they probably wouldn't have survived as a company. And we all have pivotal moments when we have to make a decision, when push comes to shove, or when we need to know, how do I guide my life? We need to know, is this an opportunity for me? Well, if it is, if it doesn't align with my core values, I, as your personal coach in this moment, would say, why the hell are you even considering them? Because it's going to pull you out of your integrity from the get-go. When you stand on the bedrock of your personal integrity, you are formidable. And when you are formidable, you are on the foundation to reach for success. And so that's why I so believe in core values. That kind of answer your question, Scott?
It certainly does. Yeah. So, and that really helped kind of solidify why, you know, knowing what these core values are that each of us have, that, you know, are unique to each of us, kind of knowing what they are, and now we know why they're important, right? So we know what the core values are. We know, you know, why they're important to know. How does that help us make choices that are true to ourselves, you know, following along those core values?
Well, so here's an example. I'm an entrepreneurial coach. Mark Twight and Lisa Twight at the time had just left Hollywood. The 300 movies were hitting the screen. They were having phenomenal success getting the physiques of real authentic strength into these actors and actresses. They were working with the Navy SEALs. They were working with other secret services. And they were finding so much success that they needed help. And I worked with them very quickly. They were quick studies. Within 6 months, we met their objectives. And Mark and Lisa turned to me and said, thank you for coaching us. This has been so useful. We want to coach you. We have an invitation-only gym, Jim Jones. Have you ever been to a gym? I said, no, I just finished raising 3 kids. What would I have done in a gym? I have my own business. I've raised 3 kids as a single parent. And they said, we would like to invite you to come and let us coach you. And I had to go back to my core values. And I took each one of them. One is integrity. So for me, integrity is being willing to be honest with yourself. And I thought, you know, honestly, this kind of intrigues me. One is courage. And I thought, it also scares the shit out of me to go into this place and transform. But courage is one of my guiding principles. And the last one was freedom. And I realized I was just about to turn 50 and my body wasn't, I wasn't able to be as strong or as fast as I had been as a kid. And I thought, maybe I'm losing some of my freedom. So I signed up. I said yes. It changed my life. So that's just a practical decision where I looked and all three were in alignment. To your point as a parent, I had a situation with my daughter. She was tiny before I'd even identified these values. She destroyed a piece of property. Unwittingly, she put her foot on a gentleman who was a neighbor who was a master gardener who had created these, he purchased these shrubs from some international garden space that spelled out his name, and that was on his lawn. And when they were covered with snow, she thought they looked great, and she wanted to stand on the one letter in his name that was the first letter of her name. She stood on it and crushed the little plant. Now, nobody saw it but she and I. It was in the nighttime. And I could have walked away from that. I was poor, single parent, school teacher. I didn't have the money to replace the shrub. But deep in my heart, I knew I needed to teach her honesty. It goes back to my integrity value. And I needed to be honest myself. I would go by that man's yard every day and I would think, we lied about that. So holding her hand, we went to his door. We knocked on the door and both of us crying, we told him what happened. He was livid. He was crying, but enough emotional intelligence was driving him that he said, please come in. And we talked together. And by the time we talked it through, he said, you know, I'm a master gardener. I have a free account with this company. I can get another shrub. I'm crushed because this is my life. But I'm also glad you told me because I would still be suspicious of my neighbors. So we had a win-win, but it was one of the hardest things I've ever done. And it's taught this child something and it taught me something. So that's the kind of gut-wrenching in the moment guidelines that we all need to keep us with our moral compass aligned. And I can't think of a better time in history when human beings need to revisit what is that moral compass and make decisions that are right for us, but can also live in co-creative rightness or alignment with others. There can be mutual success. And sometimes it just comes down to, Scott, what do I value? What do you value? On the outside, it may look like they are disparate. It may look like they have to be in conflict. My belief is we can find ways, I'm not talking compromise, we can find ways for mutual success and come up with new ways of living together that puts us all in our integrity once again.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a really great example of, you know, how that core value of integrity, you know, kind of helped you, not only helped you make the right decision and do the right thing, you know, by your neighbor, by going to his door and telling him what had happened, mm-hmm. but also by instilling that value in your own child by showing her, you know, this is what you do when you do something wrong and you kind of mess up. Well, let's go make it right. And let's, you know, it might hurt, but you sort of have to own up to your mistakes and your whatever your actions happen to be, because that's just who we are as people of integrity, you know, and that's yeah. how that works. So, so it looks like we're actually coming up on time. We actually kind of went a little bit over time here on this episode, but it's really been great, good information, I think, on you know, trying to figure out our core values and knowing who we are and how that can help us, you know, down the road make better decisions. So it's been great having you on the show. Where can people go to find out more about you and what you do?
Sure. So SoulSalt, SoulSalt.com. We have a website, lots of blogs. You can sign up for our newsletter. I usually do a Facebook Live every Tuesday morning, Mountain Time, 9 o'clock. And I personally run the SoulSalt Instagram account and also my own account, which is LYN and Christian, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-A-N. So I run those accounts. I rarely post on Facebook. I'm not on Twitter. I do spend a lot of my focus on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn. So those are, I think those are the best places. And maybe in a future talk or a future conversation, we'll talk about conversational intelligence. I do have a temporary podcast we put together with Judith E. Glaser called What's Your Conversational Intelligence? And I have a TEDx talk. So you can look at TEDx Salt Lake City. Look at my name, LYN, one N. I'm a little, I'm 5'4", so I'm not real tall, so I only get one N in my name. That's how I remember to tell audiences, one N in Lynn.
That's great. Okay, well, thank you again for being on the show and sharing this information. Like I said, we'll have Lynn back on in some future episodes as well to talk about a few other topics that I think will really be beneficial to veterans and their family members potentially and other people who are listening to the show. Lynn, I think, has a lot of really good information to share with the audience. So thank you again, Lynn.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.